Thanos has arrived and left us devastated. Today we're talking Infinity War, some highs, some lows, and some theories moving forward. This is Scott Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Hello, movie friends, and welcome to Scott Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. I am Scott, and today we're talking about Avengers Infinity War, the biggest movie of the year so far. In terms of box office, I think in terms of influence, there will be far greater influence done by Black Panther, but that's a discussion for another day. Today we're going to be talking about the ins and outs of the movie, so this is your spoiler warning, because there's a lot that goes on in this movie that is... about half of it is spoiler-worthy, especially the ending, which will be dissected a bit because there will be one to follow, and there is kind of... there's a lot of connective tissue that's going to have to get sorted out. So, yeah, so that's what we're going to talk about today, and thank you for listening after my long hiatus. As I think I discussed in the last podcast, I've been dealing with a lower back issue. I think I've got a plan of attack, and I've been able to to use the standing desk that we have at home, so I can record for now. So thank you for your patience as I've been trying to figure out a production schedule, and I think quick hits like this will help moving forward. So first things first, let's get to general reaction to the film. So my general reaction to the film is that I loved it. I enjoyed it thoroughly. One of the things that I think is so impressive about this is not only is this a movie that had so many characters in its toy box, but that it managed to use pretty much all of them in a at least somewhat meaningful way, even if not every character gets a distinctive arc. I think they do a very good job of integrating all of these characters together. That's something the Russo brothers have done before. I don't know if they worked on the script as much as perhaps they did for Winter Soldier and for Civil War, but they did, you know, this is a perfect example of how to do this big styled crossover event, which is what these which is what Avengers movies are now, because all of the individual adventures are so distinctive in their own right, or at least that's how they're becoming. So that's one of the things I would say about it. The other thing is that I didn't feel the runtime, which is impressive in a movie that is almost 3 hours long. It's about 2 hours and 45 minutes, and I didn't feel the length. I didn't feel like there was almost no scene that I looked at and thought, oh, this is too long or this is dragging. There's some spots in the middle where they're trying to explain how everything works. Especially the stuff with the Soul Stone I thought was a little more drawn out than it needed to be. But in general, I thought it was pretty phenomenal in terms of what they were able to do. I think Marvel fans in particular have a lot to this, but it's still a movie that's relatively accessible to outsiders, because you can at least just know who these characters are and what they're capable of, and then get the idea, you know, once you know what Thanos' goal is and what everybody has to do to protect everything or to prevent him from achieving his goal, then you can figure things out. So I enjoyed all of that thoroughly. In terms, my favorite stuff I've already listed in a post before, it's a lot of little moments. For instance, little things like Captain America and Black Panther running ahead of the charge because of their enhanced strength. Little details like that. I feel like some movies just kind of underrate them. One thing I would like to point out is that every single character, for the most part, seemed to have some new move or gadget or something that they were just out of nowhere insanely good at. The hand-to-hand combat is fine, but I think in terms of, you know, like, Falcon had new stuff that he was throwing out. They had War Machine was going out, you know, laying down like tactical bombs, like a B-52. Iron Man had so many new things that he was capable of doing. They got the Civil War era Spider-Man suit for Spider-Man, which is pretty fun. And then Doctor Strange, who I didn't come in tepid on Doctor Strange, but I was kind of wondering how useful he would be, and they just OP'd him like crazy because they threw in a ton. You know, he throws out the Crimson Bands of Sidorak, he does the mirror world, he blocks everything with force fields, he does like the full Naruto, like multiples thing when he's fighting Thanos. Just a ton of fun, just a ton of fun stuff. And in terms of uniqueness and kind of blending the stuff together for action scenes, I thought they did a fantastic job. So that's the main stuff, the meat of it. I think they also did a good job of deciding on what the pairings were, because they paired people together who with similar personality types, or, you know, with similar personality types. And I'll get into that more as we discuss the main journeys of the movie, which is what I'll break down just a little bit. So one of the things I really liked in terms of the main journeys is how, as I mentioned, is how all of the characters kind of bounce off of each other in interesting ways. And they use connections that they either previously had or ones that make sense. So one thing that they did is the first main pairing is with Iron Man, Doctor Strange, and Spider-Man. That's the initial pairing over there. And the reason that, obviously, there's a lot of reasons to like it. I think one of the things that I liked about the pairing is because Doctor Strange and Iron Man have a lot of similar personality traits. They're both typically ego-driven. They're used to being the ones in charge. They're used to, you know, they can be snarky to people they don't necessarily respect. Doctor Strange in particular has learned humility in his movie, so he's kind of like, I have a sacred duty. What do you think you're... I'm not going to listen to you. Like, I'm called, you know, on behalf of the universe, our universe. And they also continue the parental kind of de facto father figure relationship from Civil War and then Spider-Man Homecoming, with Spider-Man getting involved. And I really liked... Tom Holland, I think, was great in Spider-Man Homecoming. I really liked him here because he had a lot of good moments, because he was still light in spite of... he showed his child... well, not childlike nature, but he showed that he was young. And they had a lot of moments with him kind of showing that in terms of how he's talking about tactics, or the fact that he can't really explain that he his muddled way of explaining that he knows that this fight is bigger than everybody else. And even when he's fighting people, he's like, wait, is this the person we're supposed to be fighting? I don't understand what's going on. So he's happy to kind of lay back, but he also feels so driven by, you know, heroic necessity to do all this stuff. And obviously the last scene with when people are starting to die off between Tom Holland and Robert Downey Jr. is, it's crushing. Those two do such a good job. And this is also one of the other things, is that this entire through line of this entire movie is all about fatherhood and family and connections. And it's all just designed to break your heart. And it's really, really good at it. And it's still exciting, which is difficult. This is still, despite being a part one, obviously, because you can't just end things the way they did, this is still a movie I would watch again because it's so effective at what it does. It still manages to entertain. So that's the main first journey. And then I'm going to bring in the second journey. So then it's Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor. And the Guardians, when we last left them, everything was kind of in flux. This is one section where I felt like things were a bit rushed, because after hinting that at a romantic future between Gamora and Peter Quill, they just jump straight to it. At this point, they are together, and Gamora has secret info that Thanos needs, and Thor needs to get a Thanos killing weapon. So Rocket, who loves the idea of these awesome weapons, takes him and Groot and goes off. And then Star-Lord, Gamora, Drax, and Mantis go off on their own way. And obviously the banter between these groups is pretty good. I actually really, for whatever reason, really like Thor and Rocket as a banter team. I think it's great. And again, just demonstrating how, I think, underrated Chris Hemsworth is, considering that almost his entire role in this movie is played against CGI or mocap, and that's hard. And I know doing mocap is hard, but it is difficult when you're having to have these, you know, jokes or, you know, banter moments and stuff like that. So I thought that was all great. In terms of the Guardian storyline, I think one of the things, and I've heard this brought up by one of my favorite YouTubers, Movie Bob, talking about how Star-Lord's arc is almost realized and then taken away, because he's somebody who couldn't let go of his mother even in her dying moment, and in this point was accepting the loss of Gamora for the greater good, and then has that snatched away from him when his gun shoots bubbles instead of an energy blast that would have killed Gamora. So because he's gone, you know, that's the most mature thing he's ever done, and it's taken away, which means that later when he loses his stuff, it just makes more sense. It makes a ton of sense to me that he loses his stuff because, you know, his effort and the mental anguish that he went through meant nothing. And so he just reverts back to what he knows. In terms of the Rocket, Thor, and Groot storyline, that was the most, like, corny, but it was very, like, cheesy because they're like, well, we need to get this open and he's burned up. And it's all of these really calculated moments it's all splash panel moments, as I would describe. And for non-comic fans, splash panels are when they basically take an entire page dedicated to, like, one move or one action. And his entire journey from, like, opening the forge, like, taking all the heat of the star, to Groot chopping off his arm and pick it and then adding it to the metal of the hammer, just nonstop. And I just loved it. I couldn't help myself. And I wrote this before, but when Thor came down in the battle on Wakanda, with the full lightning bolt and the hammer that's just wrecking everybody, I literally shouted God mode in the theater. So it was a ton of fun. And the other thing in terms of Guardians going back to Star-Lord is that Star-Lord in many instances plays off like a younger version of Tony and Doctor Strange, and even more so than Peter Parker, because Peter Parker understands responsibility and Star-Lord at this point is just all rage. He's all emotion, and which is interesting because he's also with some, he's not like the people he's paired with are also either all about emotion, like Mantis, because she regulates emotion, or driven by emotion, which is Drax, because he's driven by revenge. He wants to kill Thanos. So they're just all on a track to wanting to kill Thanos, while these other people are like, okay, we need to stop Thanos. And then, obviously, eventually that internal clash ends up sabotaging the mission. Though I will note that Doctor Strange giving up the Time Stone when he didn't need to, he even says when he's being interrogated with those shards of glass or whatever, that even if they kill him, the stone is still protected. So he has to have a reason for giving it up, because, you know, he does the all, like, 14 million calculations or versions of the play in his head. But so I think that he, you know, otherwise you tell Star-Lord what's going to happen. You tell everybody what's going to happen, you know. So I think that he is smart enough and self-sacrificing enough at this point to know that, as he tells Tony, this isn't the end game, and then fades away. It's like he knew that was coming. So he seems to understand that Tony is a linchpin. And that's a moment that I really like, but it's also one of those moments that, depending on how things play out in the next movie, will be like, well, what the hell was this all about? So we'll see where things go. In terms of a storyline I'm less thrilled with was Scarlet Witch and Vision. Now, I know there's a long-established comic history between the two, and they vaguely hint at a relationship between the two in Civil War, but there's just not enough time to truly establish them, because I know Vision has become progressively more human, but I don't know. In the comics, you can kind of accept the idea. It's like, okay, this lady with powers, you know, falls in love with this, you know, compassionate robot or something, you know, this compassionate android. But here they're just like, yeah, we've been meeting on the weekends on the down low. And it just didn't quite work for me. I thought they were very well acted scenes, especially at the end, where Scarlet Witch breaks the stone, but that is taken away by Thanos, which is yet another version of somebody doing the hardest thing, emotional thing, and then having that stripped away from them. So it is just devastating. And especially, I think it's an underrated element that with Scarlet Witch, that this is the second time she's had to watch somebody she loves die in one of these conflicts, because Ultron killed her brother and she lost her ish then. And then obviously she has a lot of reasons for not wanting to give up Vision. And obviously everybody else wants to, if possible, wants to save Vision, though, you know, you could make an argument that that's part of their downfall. But then again, that's also the reason it's like, well, that's what makes them human versus Thanos. So the other line from there is Team Cap pairing with Team Wakanda, which is one of my favorite things, because in terms of stoic, duty-driven people, it's hard to find better than T'Challa and Steve Rogers. And so Steve's entrance in the film is pretty spectacular, catching that spear, and then him, Scarlet Witch, and Falcon all coming in hot and kind of fending off the Black Order folks. And I really, they don't really get a lot to do, because Steve is just there. He's like, look, I'm here. I know what I'm designed to do. I'm a soldier. And that's what he functions as. Whereas T'Challa decides, like, well, I'm going to make good on my word from my movie and use Wakanda and its technological superiority to try to help the world. So that's, as I mentioned, the battle scene with them is kind of what the focus is all about, which includes a nice little thing, which is Hulk inside the Hulkbuster actually being effective, though being shaky at first. And I'm very curious to see where they're going to go with Hulk moving forward. Maybe it's some sort of merger. Maybe Hulk is afraid of Thanos just in general. So no, I'm not coming out again. I remember what happened last time, but we'll see what happens there. I know I'm rambling a bit about this, but like I said, there's just a lot going on in this film, and this is a, and so these are the journeys that I thought were the most interesting. And now we have to talk about death. So this movie ends with a lot of people evaporating into nothing, which is true to the beginning of the Infinity Gauntlet comic run. And in the comics, Thanos does this very early. He's already acquired the stones. He takes away half the population. Then it's up to the heroes to try to get the gauntlet away from him. And there's steps to basically everything getting put back to normal. And eventually Adam Warlock gets the Infinity Gauntlet and reverses everything back to the way it was before Thanos' intervention. And the thing that's a killer in this is that they set you up. Marvel kind of set us up, because they set everything into, you know, oh, we're all set up to succeed, and everything goes wrong at the last minute. Star-Lord loses his cool, Thanos gets free, Scarlet Witch destroys the stone, but then Thanos reverses time and brings it back, and then has the gauntlet. Thor seems to stop him, but he doesn't kill him by chopping his head, stop Thanos by killing him and chopping his head off. And then he clenches his fist, and everything turns to dust. Well, not everything turns to dust, but people start turning to dust. And I thought they made some rather pointed choices. I'm sure they're also strategic. It should be noted that the core original Avengers team is still alive, so I think that a reunion is in the future, almost impossible. But they also picked, it is just this consistency of people losing people they've already lost in some way, shape, or form. So Okoye has to watch T'Challa die again after she presumably watched him die in Black Panther. Then Cap has to watch Bucky die for real. And then Rocket has to watch Groot die, as he calls him dad. And I didn't know that at the time, but I felt it regardless. And these are CGI characters that I still cared about. And as I mentioned, the most gut-punching of them all has to be Spider-Man. Not just because there's a lot of reasons why Spider-Man fading is obviously awful, because, you know, Doctor Strange kind of just fades off. He seems to have accepted that this was going to happen. Star-Lord's, it's kind of a shock. Oh, I didn't know we're going to take this many people of the team. And then just Mr. Stark, I don't feel so good, from Tom Holland was gut-wrenching, especially because they've been playing up this fatherhood angle all the time, and so these familial connections just keep getting severed over and over and over again, and in front of the audience. And then we just cut to Thanos, who seems to be nowhere. He's done it. And then the movie ends, and now everybody's left to wonder, you know, who's actually gone. Now obviously certain characters are going to come back, but the question is how, or how many of them are going to come back? Because there are people who have been straight up just killed, like by Thanos' literal hands, not the gauntlet, not him clenching his fist. So we have Gamora, and there's a lot of theories going on Gamora, because some people are saying, well, she's in the Soul Stone, which is why Thanos, when he clenches his fist, that's why he sees a young version of Gamora. And I would kind of think so, for a couple of reasons. One, I think that we need, I don't know, I think that we need more resolution and development with Gamora and Star-Lord and Nebula. Like, Gamora has a couple of big thematic through lines that I think she's yet to finish, and also that she's yet to figure out, because for her, it seemed like her entire arc was about coming to grips with the idea of killing, you know, somebody that was still a father. I don't think they explained that very well. I still felt the emotions of the scene, but I wasn't sure that that was explained very well, why she feels this emotional connection to Thanos. And, you know, that, you know, they keep referencing her that she's like this, you know, crazy murderer. I kind of wanted more of a flashback to indicate that he was a father to her or treated her well, because there's a reason, you know, there's still, or at least there was an emotional connection outside of he was around and beat the shit out of me and beat the shit out of my sister, because he clearly doesn't care about Nebula. So I wonder why that's the difference. Maybe Gamora was first. I don't know, but I'm curious about that. So I think there probably will be more of that moving forward. I do think Loki's dead. That's a hard one, but I think it also is in line. Loki had nowhere else to go at this point. He can only revert back after Thor Ragnarok, because Thor Ragnarok was the first time Loki is like, you know what, I have this family, you know, I have a brother, he actually views me as one and seems to want me to be better, so I'm going to be better. And he tries to trick Thanos, and that's his like send-off, is trying to trick Thanos, and he gets like an inch away with a blade, which I don't know if anybody's blades will actually cut through Thanos unless they're made in that giant forge that Thor went to. But I was, you know, his death and just basically being suffocated by Thanos is really rough. And, you know, just kind of a good arc for him, because he's somebody who has every reason to just join up with Thanos at this point, because it's like, you know what, I'm gonna join because I tried this before and it almost worked, but you know, with the Chitauri and that big, you know, the Tesseract, but I'm gonna try it again. And he doesn't, he instead stays loyal to his adoptive brother and family. And so I actually felt his death was effective, and like I mentioned, just it's actually not gruesome, but it's kind of like, oh, it's just, it's very difficult to watch, because it's not something simple like, oh, I'm gonna stab, you know, Tony in the gut, which they do later to fake you out. They, side note, Marvel played everybody in the trailers just like I thought they would, because they have a lot of, they showed a lot of everybody that they showed that looked like they could be dead, including Cap holding Thanos's gauntlet hand, which is, first off, essential Captain America right there. Him just holding the gauntlet with rage in his face, and then even though Thanos just beats him down after that, that is the epitome of Steve Rogers, like that, just fighting back regardless of impossible odds and essentially holding up the hand of a god even for a half second. It was just a perfect Cap moment. But they've even showed clips of Tony seemingly like it's in the movie where he's holding his side because he's been stabbed, and you're like, oh, are they gonna kill everybody? And I thought they might, but they showed it to us, which is, Marvel has been so good about keeping the big reveals away from us, even if we know that they're written. So, like Winter Soldier, for instance, there's nothing in the trailers that indicates that that's Bucky. So, so that's something I thought they did really well. And so, anyway, so none of those people are actually dead or actually killed by anything. In terms of other deaths, Heimdall, I believe, is dead. There's, it sounds like, all the people on Dr. Steve Rule's planet might be dead, or at least half of them. It seems that there's been a lot of, you know, minor genocides going on. I think half the Asgardians are alive, but that remains to be seen. I'm wondering how this, all of this connective tissue is going to be put back together, because the big question is, if somebody else is able to wield the Infinity Gauntlet or reverse time, what are they going to do with it? Or are they just going to be like, yeah, it's fine, or choice revitalizations. I heard somebody mention, like, oh, who's going to assemble the Dragon Balls and wish back the people that were killed by Thanos? So it remains to be seen, but I am very curious to see how certain characters will come back and if they will come back. I am generally fine with most of it. There are certain characters that I do want back, obviously, that are guaranteed back. But I'm, like I said, I'm just curious how they're going to wrap it all up because it seems a bit messy. And the last thing I want to talk about is Thanos. I loved Thanos. I thought his performance was great. I thought the mocap was really good. Josh Brolin looks like he's about to be in two home runs this summer between this and Deadpool, which apparently even in the marketing was referencing him as Thanos, which go Deadpool, always stay meta. But I think the thing that this movie does really well is that it actually demonstrates like the thinking and his motivation and how he makes connections. It's not a character you empathize with because he's insane, because as people have pointed out, like people are like, oh, this is a giant plot hole, why didn't he just develop twice the resources instead of getting rid of half the people? Well, he's a sociopath. Like, he doesn't understand that. He's psychotic. He's genocidal. He thinks that the beings are the problem. He doesn't think that the resources are the problem. Or, you know, that's, it's something that's literally reinforces his thinking. But I also like that they drifted away from his comic stuff. And I've, like I said, I referred to this. In the comics, he's in love with death and is always trying to impress the female embodiment of death. And that is really, really dumb if you're going to put it up in a movie theater and try to tell people like, oh yes, he's in love with this character we've never introduced you to, the female, the, you know, the embodiment of death. What do you think of this? Isn't this crazy? But it is something you could do at a big comic event because it's the Infinity Gauntlet plays like a one-off, and that's, you know, that could have consequences moving forward. It leaves the door open for that. But this is the culmination of an entire cinematic universe that's been building to here at least since Captain America, because the other movies have been, you know, maybe vaguely reference these, but Captain America was the first one that introduced an Infinity Stone, which is why I'm marking it as the origin point. And then, you know, we saw him in the original Avengers, and that was, you know, 6 years ago, and they've had a ton of movies since then, just building and putting all these building blocks together. And, you know, when you have a villain that big, you need him to be that imposing and that interesting. And he was very interesting because he seems to have this, I don't know, this, I've heard some literary references or, you know, philosophical references to his mindset, but it's this idea of not even survival of the fittest, but it's just like, you know what, half of people need to be eliminated because this is the right thing to do. He thinks he's the hero, and that's why the movie is essentially about him. And as I've mentioned, he's not the hero, and I don't agree with his perspective, but the movie portrays it in a way that you start to see, you know, you understand his perspective, even though it's monstrous, as you see as things move on and things develop. In terms of demonstrating his power, they do such a good job, because even without the gauntlet, he's like, all right, I'm gonna take my armor off, I'm gonna take out your biggest gun, I'm gonna take out the Hulk in the first scene. And that, it was amazing. It's the kind of thing that basically made it seem that it made every potential victory, especially once he got the reality warping. After that, he just snatches every victory away from the heroes because that's just how OP'd he is. That's just how overpowered he is, with both as a being, but also with the gauntlet, because there's just so much he can do. So, you know, the fact that he can throw a moon at a planet is ridiculous, and that they're still fighting in the face of it. Because I didn't go into this movie even when things started, I didn't think that the heroes would win. That's how overpowered he is, especially with the gauntlet. And to see the heroes truly fail is something new, and also something, you know, not, I wouldn't necessarily say gutsy, because I think a lot of comics fans saw it coming, but you need it to still be satisfying, and you still need the audience to understand the power level and the motivation of the villain. Because, for instance, that's why stuff like, you know, that's why certain villains don't hit as hard even in good series. So, for instance, Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight series, Ra's al Ghul, and I always say Ra's, has, you understand his motivation, it's pretty well clear, and then it's about Batman separating himself from that. So that motivation is clear. The Joker is basically the antithesis of Batman, And it's like, as we mentioned, it's a battle for Gotham's soul. And it is in essence. And then you bring up Bane, who essentially seems to want to cause an uprising that got rid of the elites, who got rid of all of the criminals by perhaps shady means, but also wants to destroy Gotham. And then it turns out to be a vengeance plot. It's just very muddled. And so it's hard, even if Bane is physically imposing to Batman and seems to have a lot of control and has put this whole city at danger, it's not as interesting because it doesn't feel like as personal of a challenge to Batman. It's not a challenge to, it's not a challenge to his will necessarily. It's a challenge to his will, but it's not a challenge to him as a person, if that makes sense, or to his capabilities, because, you don't go into that movie thinking, oh, definitely, Bane's definitely going to win. You know, at some point he's probably going to get broken and then come back. And so for Thanos to come in and be like, screw you to every moment that has any meaning to you, all of your effort means nothing because I am that powerful. It doesn't matter how many people are working together. It doesn't matter at all. They're barely able to hold him steady when they have him on Titan. So I just thought it was really well done, and obviously I was very invested, and it's a movie, and as I mentioned before, this is a part one that wasn't announced as a part one that I would happily see plenty of times because there's so much going on and the villain is so compelling. So we'll see if they can maintain that moving forward, but like I said, Thanos kicks a lot of ass in this movie. So we'll see where things go from here. We have Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is oddly, I feel like could get an uptick from this movie. Not necessarily, we'll see if it breaks $200 million. I don't think it did, at least domestically. I don't think it did last time, but it's still successful. But I think now everybody's wondering, like, where is this in the timeline? I'm fairly certain it happens before everything. But how is this going to affect everything? Because I'm just imagining a scenario where, they save the day and then half of the team fades away. Or we could get some, like a quip from Michael Pena before he fades away or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see how things go moving forward. Obviously, Marvel is putting all of their toy bag up again. And so that's, we're all waiting for the second part of this. And that's kind of eagerly anticipating wanting to discuss this movie. And I think that's kind of the mastery of it. And I'm speaking hyperbolically, but like I said, it was a very involving experience. And I think most people leave the movie at least wanting to discuss it, which I think is what you want from a kind of a, not landmark, but a big time blockbuster, big time movie event like this. So obviously I enjoyed it. I'm sure some of you have differing opinions. Definitely let me know either in comments. I'm happy to discuss. I tend to discuss on the board on Scott Self-Indulgent Movie Review World. So let me know what you think. So that's it for today. Again, thank you for listening, and sorry for the hiatus. I'm going to try to pump these out and make them shorter and sweeter for you. But in the meantime, thank you for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Thank you very much, movie friends. I'll see you next time. This has been Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe wherever you find your podcasts, including iTunes and Google Play. And don't forget to check out the blog, Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Review Blog, for daily posts, and our Facebook group, Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie World, for discussion and all kinds of fun stuff. See you later, movie friends.